What's up, gamers, and welcome to Lost at Sea Gaming. I am Hulking Yoda, the captain of this ship, the SS Gamer, and you have just stepped into my captain's quarters, my weekly gaming update show where I talk about my favorite gaming news topic of the past week, discuss what games I've been playing, give tips on some of those games, as well as issue a weekly relevant gaming-related decree. This week, it's the conclusion of my month-long terror on the sea. And I could not think of a series more terrifying that I would rather close out this season of Halloween with than Silent Hill. So let's talk about it and dive right into the episode and Terror on the Sea. Gamers, if you've been following me for a while, you gotta know by now that I am a massive horror genre fan, no matter the medium. I mean, I do my own month-long season of terror and horror and Halloween segments or specials or whatever the case may be. It's been something different every year for the past 3 years, and I love it. I can't wait till the month of October rolls around every year to figure out what it is I'm doing for Terror on the Sea this year. It's been a lot of fun this past 4 weeks getting together all these different horror games that are coming out, but I gotta tell you, it was no more fun than this most recent research for this current episode because, gamers, one of my most absolute favorite franchises in all of gaming for so many years now, decades, has been Silent Hill. Ever since that first game came out in 1999, I have been absolutely obsessed with that town. You know, the series has had ups and downs over the years. I haven't beaten every single game that came out for one reason or another, but I have been waiting with bated breath for the actual confirmation, official announcement from Konami, some kind of visual proof that for the last few years, these rumors that we've heard that Konami has been working on Silent Hill games, multiple games, remakes, whatever the case may be, I've been waiting forever to finally get some real concrete proof. And gamers, the semi-patience that I have had has paid off at this point because, as I'm sure most of you know at this point, because this was a couple weeks ago, but I was on vacation, family vacation, so that is one reason why this is a 2 weeks worth, I guess, in a sense, of Captain's Quarters. But that is why here we are, and I am finally able to talk about on the show Silent Hill Transmission, the event that Konami held a couple of weeks ago highlighting the future of Silent Hill. And I could not have come away from it more excited, more shocked, and more confused than I actually did, I think. And confused in a good way. So I'm going to get into the details of all of the games, multiple games that were mentioned, and everything else that kind of was touched on at this event. My excitement around it, my thoughts on it, what I'm looking forward to, what I'm not looking forward to. And the first game and announcement from Silent Hill Transmission that I have to cover is probably the biggest, I would dare say, announcement from the show, which was the official confirmation of a remake in the series. But, gamers, it was not the remake that probably most of us, and that's myself included, expected it to be. I think for the most part, we all kind of expected or assumed it was going to be the original Silent Hill that got remade because it's the original, it's the oldest coming from PlayStation 1 hardware, and if you're going to reboot the series and remake a game, why wouldn't you start with the original, right? Well, I was all about that. I loved that original game, absolutely loved it, but was caught with a curveball when it was confirmed the remake in question and rumor for all this time is in fact a remake of Silent Hill 2. And I'm not mad at it. And I got to tell you, it's being developed by one of my favorite development teams and one of the best, I think, right now in the horror genre, and that is Bloober Team. I love Bloober Team, their Layers of Fear series, what they've done with Blair Witch. I had some questionable things that they did with that game, but overall, I enjoyed it. I loved the medium. I just think they get the horror genre. They get it. And when I played through the medium, and you can check out my review for my detailed thoughts on it right here on this channel. When I played the medium, there was so much about it that reminded me of Silent Hill. From the third-person viewpoint, exploring this town and certain aspects of these buildings and hospitals that you go through, the music, there was just a lot of Silent Hill echoing throughout that game. So it's no surprise to me that Konami reached out to them and said, hey, we would like you to remake Silent Hill 2 for us. We think that you've done a lot of great work in the horror genre, and probably said to them, you guys get it. But the really cool thing about it is not just the fact that Bloober Team is the developer on the project, they also are having help of the original Team Silent. Now, Team Silent here, it's very crucial and critical to have that team as part of this process and on some of these games we're going to talk about, because Team Silent is some of the composers or producers or creature designers that were on those original games that helped make those games so iconic in all those different areas. Now, first up is artist Masahiro Ito, and then we also have, in my personal opinion, arguably the most important piece here of Team Silent, which is the composer Akira Yamaoka. Now, if you have played the Silent Hill games, you know there is something very unique and special about the sound of those games' musical scores, especially those original games. There's just, oh man, you just knew when you changed from original, the regular Silent Hill, into the Hell version of Silent Hill, and just the loud bangs and noises and the way that he implemented sounds with musical chords. It was excellent. So the fact that they are back, the creature designers, those unique enemy types that you can't get anywhere else but Silent Hill, that have influenced many other enemy types over the years and decades that followed. I mean, this is just huge pieces to the puzzle, in my opinion. And the game is going to be developed from the ground up, absolute complete remake, exclusively on console for PS5. And of course, it'll be available on PC. Now, to clarify, that PS5 exclusivity, it is one of those, it's good for a year from the release date of the game. We did see that confirmation at the end of the trailer that was released for Silent Hill 2 Remake. And I'm not mad at it, because I do think that being made from the ground up for the PS5, and then essentially, I don't want to say necessarily ported over to the Xbox in a year from its release, but it's probably more than likely what'll happen. I think that that will give the opportunity for Silent Hill 2 to really maximize the options and opportunities for immersion that the PS5 offers through the DualSense, through the 3D Pulse headset, and that 3D audio on the PS5. So I can't wait to actually get my hands on that DualSense and see what all those probably terrifying features are going to be. Now, of course, they are going to be, Bloober Team that is, utilizing newest technology on hand and delivering the game in 4K. DualSense functionality, speaking of that, was confirmed. Now, if you don't know anything about Silent Hill 2, just to give a brief synopsis of the story of this game and what you can kind of expect, it is going to be retelling the story of the original game of James Sunderland. And he's come to Silent Hill looking for his dead wife, who, get this, sent him a mysterious letter. And the return address was right there from Silent Hill. So kind of creepy if you ask me. Wifey sends me a piece of mail from a town that I've never heard of, but more importantly, she's dead. So what is going on here? Now, I thought that was a very awesome premise back in the day when the game first came out, and there's just a lot to unpack here from that storyline, just of things I've seen and read over the years. Don't know the full extent of the story, as I said. There are a few Silent Hill games over the years that I never beat. Silent Hill 2 is one of those games, and I am very much excited for the fact that I get a second opportunity in modern technology to re-experience and to fully experience this game's story and its characters. Now, one of the other big things about this game is very much lauded as one of the greatest horror games of all time for many reasons. a lot of iconic story and imagery. Probably the most iconic piece of this game, though, was the debut of the character of Pyramid Head. Now, I'm sure most gamers, even if you haven't played the Silent Hill franchise, you know who Pyramid Head is. A very distinguishable character, very recognizable, and has been very popular in the decades since the original game released. The original Silent Hill 2, that is. And he's just been a very cool character, very terrifying. That's actually just about as far as I got into the game, which I know isn't really that far. But that first encounter with Pyramid Head is pretty much where I got to, just past that. And so I can't wait to see what other moments Pyramid Head has in store for me in this retelling of the story. But with all this being said, I have to talk to you about how I felt about the trailer of Silent Hill 2. First off, the visuals were just absolutely amazing. I mean, they were just jaw-dropping to me how gorgeous the game looks, how realistic the facial animations are. And look, we've already seen and heard how demanding the specs are going to be on PC. So I'm sure, obviously, console can't run as good as a high-end PC, but I'm still saying it's going to be an amazingly beautiful, gorgeous-looking game, and I cannot wait to experience it. Just seeing that town of Silent Hill and James Sunderland walking around these areas, and some of the scenes are from areas that I had already played in the game, so I kind of recognized it, so I was like, man, it's going to be really awesome to re-experience this. And just what I've been thinking about and hoping for all these years, which is experiencing the town of Silent Hill with current gen technology. So the trailer, I just thought it was awesome. From the music, from the graphics, from the way it looks like it's paying very much and staying true to the original. I cannot wait. I will say, there was no specific release date given for this game, but since the transmission event, it was stated, the president of Bloober Team had actually said the game is in the polishing stage, which is an advanced stage of development. So honestly, guys, I think we're probably going to get this game a lot sooner than what we may have initially thought, having it just now confirmed in October of 22. I would not be shocked if, I mean, the polishing stage, that means you've done all the basic development and you're going through and you're literally making sure the final bugs are checked and taken out of there and just literally what it says, polishing. So if we get this game by next summer, that would be amazing. I don't think that they'll release it too early in the year because already we have the Dead Space remake coming out at the end of January. We have Resident Evil 4's remake coming out in March. And we've just had Callisto Protocol by that point would have come out in December of this year. So hopefully with a kind of a crowded, and I'm very excited about that, the fact that it's a crowded survival horror launch window, I'm saying that I think it's probably best if they release it maybe towards the beginning of the summer. That would be an awesome way to kick off the summer for me. But gamers, that was just the first game that was talked about at Silent Hill Transmission. There were three main type of games, if you will, that were announced. And the next one was called Silent Hill Townfall. Now, this game is being developed by No Code and published by, and here was the kind of like, oh, kind of raising an eyebrow moment, published by Annapurna Interactive. Now, if you don't know who Annapurna is, they actually just published Stray, the cat starring game of the summer that I personally loved. If you want to see how much I loved it, check out my review of that as well. But I got to tell you, Annapurna has been on a roll. They've been really supportive of a lot of great games and developers in these last couple of years. So when it came out that they were actually publishing this game, it was like, oh, okay, all right. Now, when we talk about the trailer that was shown off for Townfall, it was a very brief trailer, but it was just enough for me, honestly, to get absolutely stoked for what the details are and what this game could potentially be. So really, what is kind of going on in the trailer? Not a whole lot that we can kind of gather from it. It's kind of a black and red dominated colors, interspersed with scenes of shorelines and waves crashing into the shoreline. And it kind of intersperses between that and a scene with this kind of a radio or CRTV kind of device that's sitting on a table that has flashing images on its screen of creatures or ghostly images, silhouettes of what looks to be a human, and just some other things that I honestly couldn't really quite make out. But there was a voiceover that was happening while this was all going on, and the key phrase that stood out to me was, "While you're here, you're gonna be punished." Now, in my opinion, and this is kind of basically the gist of the trailer, you just kind of go back and forth between the red and black, waves crashing into the shoreline. You keep camera slowly pans in and zooms in on that receiver, and you see the different flashing imagery as this monologue is happening. And essentially, that's it. It just kind of comes up and Silent Hill Townfall, and that's basically the end of the minute or so trailer. But my point is, while you're here, you're gonna be punished. Now, for me, that stood out because the guy has got to be talking about, it was a male voice, he's got to be talking about, while you are here in Silent Hill, you're gonna be punished. And the reason I say that is because since that first original game, Silent Hill has always been looked at, the town itself, as a sort of purgatory for its game's main characters. You know, these characters have typically done something in their past that they're running from or ashamed of, and they end up in Silent Hill to pay their dues for those actions. Now, no co-creative director John McKellen, he appeared on screen and talked briefly about working on this game, and he says, quote-unquote, "It respects the source material, but also does something a little bit different with it." And he does go on to add that while they can't show more yet, there is going to be more info shown sometime next year. And he suggested that we all watch the trailer again to see what we might have missed. A lot of Easter eggs and innuendo there. I personally have watched the trailer twice, and I've tried to pick up on a few things here or there. But again, the biggest thing that really stood out to me, oh man, it's Silent Hill, man. That is purgatory in these games, and that's exactly what he's talking about. But who is this person talking to? What is the context behind what they're talking about? Can't wait. But I'll have to wait for a while because the game is not going to release until after the launch of Silent Hill 2's remake that was confirmed, which possibly means as late as 2024, maybe even later. So with the hope that Silent Hill 2 is in the polishing stages, right? Hopefully that means it comes out next year. Probably won't see Townfall until either late next year or definitely not until before 2024. Now, what was next that they had to show us? A third game. And this is probably the most confusing, but in a good way, game shown off, announcement shown off at this event. And that was Silent Hill F. And this game looks totally different, but also very familiar in a good way. It is the first spin-off game in the series, and it's actually set in 1960s Japan. And I really am interested. With that being said, I'm interested to see how they can call it Silent Hill, the game, right? And not take place there. Now, here's my speculation. Maybe the game starts in Silent Hill, and there's some kind of dimensional rift that teleports the player from the present-day Silent Hill to 1960s Japan. I could see that being their excuse or their justification or explanation as to why it's a Silent Hill game. It's still called Silent Hill, but it takes place in 1960s Japan. It is being developed by Neobards Entertainment, and I just want to give you kind of my thoughts on what the description and just in general, the trailer, how it left me feeling at the end of it. So the trailer, it starts out in what looks to be a Japanese town, the Japanese town equivalent of Silent Hill. Looks like we're running on in-engine visuals. There is a disclaimer, though, stating that it's not actual gameplay, but it doesn't mean that it's not in-engine. So hopefully it is, because honestly, it looked really good. This town, that is. And the reason I say it's the equivalent to Silent Hill as a town is there's just a lot of camera panning shots that move in between houses and other buildings and streets, and it just makes it look like that same kind of town that Silent Hill is, without the fog. And what would Silent Hill be without fog, right? And we see that fog kind of creeping in the environment through the spaces in between houses and buildings. And just as the trailer continues, we see these red, veiny vine tendrils that start to overtake the environment. And guys, in my opinion, this is showing the town transitioning, as Silent Hill always does, from its normal version to, as I stated before, the hell version. So as opposed to going to all rust and metal grates and everything that the American Silent Hill town goes to, this looks to maybe be overcome by these red, vine, veiny, flowery type looking things in Japan. Ultimately, the trailer ends. We see a girl who, I am assuming, at the beginning of the trailer, there was a girl who's standing looking down at a tree. And at the end of the trailer, we see who I'm assuming is the same girl on a boat or a raft or whatever it is, a very small floating device as she's floating down a river. And you see a torii gate, looks like she's floating towards the torii gate. And as she's on this body of water going towards that torii gate, it's covered in flowers, this floating device. And the flowers, they slowly continue to overtake her until all is covered on her but her face, from underneath her eyes down. And then we see a tear fall from her left eye as her face falls off. It's pretty nuts. Now, my favorite part of this trailer, though, was the end, when they show the title and developer and names of those involved with the development of the game, because the music they played during this part, it was basically, you take Japanese musical instruments and you use those instruments to create the main Silent Hill title theme from the original game on PlayStation 1. And it was awesome. I just thought it was awesome and really a cool wink and nod from the developers to the fans. So I'm very excited for this one to see what it's really all about. And honestly, especially considering it's being touted as the next mainline Silent Hill game. So technically the last mainline game in the series was Silent Hill Downpour all those years ago. This is considered the sequel or the next one in line after that. So very, very interesting. And now next up, we had Silent Hill Ascension. Now, this is not necessarily a game. It is kind of being touted as this live service, if you will, because it says, goes live 2023, face your trauma together, is actually a tagline that was on the trailer. And the trailer is very interesting, kind of really just kind of shows, I would say, what is either some instant messaging chats or DM messages going on between a group of people. And it's about someone that they know is going to get. Something's coming for her. He's going to get her. It's going to get her. And all this is interspersed with a creepy looking creature, a demon of some sorts or whatnot, that's kind of in the shadows guarding a tower with this giant spear. And his hair kind of looks like it's active, writhing around like he's got worms for hair or something. And, you know, this tower in the background kind of alludes to the name of the game, Ascension, I would assume, as you have to ascend the tower probably. And outside of that, we really don't know exactly what else there is outside of the fact that you have to work together with people to make it through the tower and past different monsters and other things. But it seems like it may be a live service game. I'm not sure 100%. But it is being developed together by Bad Robot Productions, Behavior Interactive, GenVid Technologies, and DJ2 Entertainment. And each developer is said to be bringing something different to the table. So we'll see what those differences are. It is going to be an online experience where a collective of players interacts with the story to shape it ultimately. So very, very different kind of experience. And especially set in the Silent Hill world, that is very, very cool. Now, gaming-wise or interactive-wise, that was the final announcement from the transmission. But there was a non-interactive announcement in the form of a new movie confirmed to be coming out called Return to Silent Hill. As of right now, we don't have a specific release date for it, but the director of this film, Christopher Gans, who happened to be the director of the original Silent Hill movie that came out back in 2006, he has been on record as saying that the movie is supposed to be releasing next year. Some interesting things he said about it, though, is he said that he's making this movie for the 2023 horror genre, whereas he made the original. That was made in 2006, and it was made like horror movies were made in 2006. Things are different now. Whatever that may mean, I don't know exactly, but I will say, I just got to put it out there. and maybe I'll get some flack for this, but it's honestly how I feel. I absolutely loved that original Silent Hill movie. Loved it. The live action starring Rhoda Mitchell very, very closely tried to follow and still at the same time make it its own in a way. The storyline of the original game, you substitute Harry Mason with Rhoda Mitchell's character. And at first, I was kind of annoyed with that, but I loved the movie and the way it worked out. So I didn't hate on it. I loved it. I saw it in the theaters. I bought it when it came out on DVD at the time. I've seen it numerous times since. I just thought it was very true to the source material. And especially at the time when we had gotten the Resident Evil movie, the original one, I was so upset and disappointed with that it wasn't more closer to the game and paying more homage to the game. So to get that Silent Hill movie at the time when we did, I loved it. I will say, I absolutely hated its sequel that came 6 years later. But I'm very much looking forward to what this new Return to Silent Hill movie may be. So that was everything that was announced at Silent Hill Transmission, a massive amount of content and just stuff to digest. And if you're a hardcore Silent Hill fan, if you've been waiting for years for just anything, then this was absolutely more than you could have ever hoped for. And guys, I just cannot wait. Silent Hill 2 remake, please. I'm assuming that's the very first one that's up. Please, gimme, gimme, gimme. I want to play it right now. I'll be honest with you. If I had the Callisto Protocol, the Dead Space remake, and the Resident Evil 4 remake, all three of these games coming out over the next 4 months, 5 months, if I had them all sitting there with Silent Hill 2 remake as well, I would definitely jump on that Silent Hill 2 remake first. That is how excited I am, and that's where I'm at right now. But that's what I had this week for my final Terror on the Sea of the season. Now let's go open up my captain's log and see what games I've been playing. Gamers, just this past week, we had a game release brand new that I could not wait for and could not wait to jump back into its world to continue its story of its main characters of Amicia and Hugo. And that's the first game up in Captain's Log that I want to talk about, A Plague Tale: Requiem. Gamers, when A Plague Tale: Requiem released, I was actually still on vacation, so I didn't get to jump on it right when it first came out on launch day or week. But as soon as I got back from vacation, trust me, I could not wait to get my hands back on the DualSense and see what was going on in the world of Hugo and Amicia. And I was able to put about 8 hours into the game since I started it up until the recording of this episode. And in that 8 hours, it allowed me enough time to complete the first four chapters in the way that I play them. And what I mean by that is, if you haven't listened to the show, I'm very much OCD with trying to explore every nook and cranny and look for the collectibles and just very, very thorough, sometimes overly so. And the ironic thing is, I've still missed two collectibles over the course of those four chapters. But it's all good. There's chapter select, so I'm not too worried about that. But you're here for my thoughts on the game, right? So what do I think so far of A Plague Tale: Requiem? Well, if you've listened to my review or even just previous episodes of Captain's Quarters as I played through A Plague Tale: Innocence, you will know that I was absolutely in love with that game. Just, oh, amazing experience. Check out my review for that if you want my detailed thoughts on it. So A Plague Tale: Requiem, as I'm going into it, I'm very, very excited. Still, briefly, I just got to say, it was for perspective just 3 months ago that I beat A Plague Tale: Innocence because I was a late bloomer when it came to playing the game. I waited until it became free on PS Plus July a year ago and tried it out. But then it sat there for a year until this past summer when I decided, you know what? I'm sticking to this game. I am making it my focal game. I'm going to beat it. And I did because I knew Requiem was coming out in October of this year, and I wanted to make sure I was ready for that. Well, let me just preface my thoughts starting out over the course of the first two chapters of Requiem by saying all that and saying that it may have been a little bit too close for me putting the time and effort into Innocence and beating it, and then 3 months later turning around and jumping into Requiem. I think it would have done me some good if I had a couple years separation. Because when I started playing the game, I was like, man, it almost felt like I was just continuing where I left off in Innocence, not necessarily a brand new game. Almost that feeling that I get sometimes, and I don't know if you guys are like this with expansions or DLC, but sometimes when you go back to a game, you've already beaten the base game and cleaned it up, but it comes out with new DLC, you go back to it, it's just that familiar kind of feeling in your mind as you're playing the game. Not necessarily a negative thing, but it's not that like euphoric feeling when you're playing a brand new fresh game, right? And I don't think that's Requiem's fault. I think it's just my fault for waiting so close to the release of Requiem to play through Innocence. But I say all that because I was not really into the first two chapters of Requiem. Initially, there was just a lot of things going on. So I think it was that. There was a little bit of gameplay fatigue that, I've just been doing this. I did it for, 20 hours in July. Here I am doing it again. But it was more than that. It was a little rough start. In addition to that, it was also the graphics just were not exactly what I expected them to be. And again, in retrospect and kind of tweaking things since the start of it all, I think some of that had to do, again, with my decision making. You can adjust the HDR settings at the beginning of the game and when you first go into the main menu. And I was playing around with that, and I think I made it too bright for the beginnings of my time with the game. So it kind of offset the graphics and skewed it a little bit to where it was kind of this bright flash effect look everywhere there was sun. And the beginning of the game is very bright with sunshine and whatnot. And so I think that kind of hampered my experience. But since I've also toned that down a little bit, and I think it's better for it. So outside of that, things that were out of my control or out of my decisions, one thing that was negative that jumped out at me was the frame rate. Now, I had some issues with the frame rate. It dipped. There was some lag there as I would say, do a quick camera turn in an area or just sometimes transitioning in and out of cutscenes. Also, something that I did not experience in Innocence were bad lip syncing on the voiceovers during the cutscenes. They were just off. So I did not have that experience with Innocence. It was kind of jarring to see. I was like, wow, like that, really? This is after Innocence and we have some of these issues here. Now, again, I tried to put into perspective for myself, hey, look, you played the PS5 definitive version of Innocence. It was the upgrade. It was years of being out and tweaked and patches and all that. So you played like the perfect version of Innocence, whereas this is the launch version of Requiem. But ultimately, as time has gone on, I've played through chapters 3 and 4, and I still have had some frame rate dippage. Voiceovers haven't really had any more bad lip syncing, to be honest with you. None that was really notable. And again, the graphics issue, I took care of that myself. All of that, though, what is the gameplay like? What is the gameplay? Well, it is very familiar to Innocence, and that's not a bad thing. It's definitely very much stealth-based, linear. I love the story so far. I'm very much drawn into that. That has been, up until recently, my favorite part of the game has been the story really driving me along. But the gameplay, it's more the same, which is to be expected of any sequel. But what I've liked about it more recently is I've finally started to get to a point in the game where I'm starting to see new additions to this game. Up to this point, it was all just the same stuff I was doing in Innocence, the same alchemy items that I was using in Innocence. Well, finally, I've started to open up a little bit within the game world and start to see new things. And I gotta tell you, I have loved the new things. And the first one is, honestly, it's the same thing as water was in the last game, but I have enjoyed having that option here. And that has been extinguish, with extinguish without the H. And that is, obviously, you can extinguish the flames on torches of soldiers so that rats can devour them, or torch lights that are lighting a path if you want, again, rats to devour the different soldiers that are walking around. Or there's other puzzle reasons that you would need to extinguish the torches and lamplights and whatnot. But the other one that I've loved, like just absolutely loved, is the newest addition to the alchemy piece of the game, and that is tar. Now, tar is flammable. So the way that you create this and the way that you come about it in the game and the way that it's utilized in the game world, lighting tar pits and essentially this massive torch for you to illuminate a giant area and make sure that rats don't go anywhere near it. In addition to, think about it, if it's flammable, you can use it to attack guards and soldiers. Whether you throw the tar at them and it explodes on them, and then you throw an Ignis and light them on fire, or many other options that I'll leave for you to discover if you play the game yourself. But I've definitely enjoyed the addition of tar. It's definitely been really cool, not just in the sense of using it against enemies, but also in puzzle solving. So it's very much, when you first are introduced to it, used in the form of a puzzle, and just utilizing it to advance and use as a solution to that puzzle, and seeing how it will more than likely come up again in puzzles as the game progresses. It's got me very excited, because that was one of my favorite parts of Innocence, was the game's puzzles. So seeing this new alchemy item and the way it's implemented in that way, very, very exciting stuff. So as I said, I played through 4 chapters. I'm at the very beginning of chapter 5. Can't wait to continue going forward with this game. But even though it was the most time put into a game during this 2 weeks since I've updated you on my captain's log, it wasn't necessarily the one that I had the most fun in. And that would be next in Super Mario Odyssey.
Here we go!
Gamers, I just told you on my last Captain's Quarters that I finally got around to trying this game out because of how excited I was about Mario in general based on the trailer for the new movie coming out. And I loved what little bit I played of it the last time that I shared with you my thoughts on it. And over the course of my time on vacation, you know, just like as if I was at home, before going to bed, you know, you wind down, I typically like to either read or play some Switch. And honestly, because of Mario and how much it just gripped my soul, 7 out of the 8 nights, I was going on Mario's Odyssey with him. Granted, cumulatively, it totaled about 5 hours or so that I was able to put into this game during the course of that vacation. And I just absolutely loved my time with this game. Now, I was able to complete the Cascade Kingdom, which was the first kingdom that you go to after that initial, I want to say it was the Hat Kingdom or the Cap Kingdom. And that Cascade Kingdom is where it has like the beginning stages for you, kind of getting you used to using Cappy as, hey, you throw him and attach him to an animal or something in the environment. You can transform into that object or being. And so you had the T-Rex and you had many other things as well that you could transform into. And that was a lot of fun. Cascade Kingdom was definitely fun. But I got to tell you, one of my favorite aspects of the Cascade Kingdom and of this game so far, there's just a lot of really cool things. But one thing I loved about the Cascade Kingdom the most was transitioning from the current gen 3D graphics into the 8-bit Mario. It's just so cool. You transition from the 3D to the 2D plane and goes to the 3D to the 2D graphics, and yeah, the music and everything changes. I just think it's awesome. Like, it's just so awesome and so seamlessly, smoothly done by Nintendo that it was just a lot of fun in the Cascade Kingdom. But when it was all said and done, I had a fun boss fight with one of the Brutals, the bridal party, if you will, of Bowser, stealing all the items that he needs to make that wedding between he and Peach happen. And I made sure that I collected enough moons to use the Hat airship, fittingly named the Odyssey, so that I could travel to the next kingdom with Cappy. Now, that kingdom happened to be the Sand Kingdom. Now, before I go into the Sand Kingdom, I just want to talk about the Odyssey first a little bit. I love the Odyssey. It's in the shape of a giant top hat, if you will, and just the coloring of it, and then you have like the interior of it. I love the fact that Mario and Cappy can just sit there in their chairs. They got this steaming cup in the shape of a cap or a hat, of course, of what I'll say is coffee, because I love tea, but I prefer coffee. So they got their mugs of coffee sitting there. You got the steam rising out of it. And in every kingdom that you go to in this game, you can actually buy and purchase with coins it's actually whatever that kingdom's specific form of currency is actually what you have to use to buy collectibles, which could be little figurines of something within that kingdom or stickers that get put around on the actual Odyssey airship. Just really cool and kind of make it your own, if you will, and customize it and just kind of have those visual reminders of your adventures that you've had throughout the course of the game with Mario. So I just love that little bit. You can change Mario's outfit and different things in there as well. It's just really, really cool stuff. Now, the Sand Kingdom. Guys, I enjoyed the irony of this kingdom because it's this giant red sanded desert. It also currently happens to be at a freezing temperature. We got shards of ice and ice sculptures all over the place. And in addition to that, my favorite sign that it's cold in this kingdom, which was Mario's shivering animation. It just cracked me up every time. If you stood still and just stopped moving, he would sit there and kind of tighten his body up and kind of shake a little bit and put his hands up to his mouth. And it was, oh man. Every single time it got me. It's just one of those, it's just another funny minor detail that helps make this game so fun. Now, my first stop in the Sand Kingdom, it was the tiny village of Tostarana. And its villagers, they were wearing sombreros and dressed in garb that was fitting of a desert home. But they, as well as Mario, were also freezing due to this sudden change in climate. So I spoke with some of the citizens for minor insights into what was happening, and most of them pointed out the brutal party in the airship that was flying overhead, as well as making sure to drive home the importance and sacredness of the inverted pyramid that happened to be looming in the distance, which is the focal point of the entire desert. So before I got to that inverted pyramid and chased down the brutals, I did a decent amount of exploring of the Red Sands and its different platforming options, coin and moon collecting across many of the stone buildings and half-buried ancient temples that dotted the horizons, and I made my way to the centerpiece of the kingdom, that being that inverted pyramid. So it was pretty cool making my way through the pyramid. You have your boss fights. There's a little mini boss fight plus one at the end of the top of the pyramid. And just had a lot of fun doing those things. But ultimately, I had acquired enough moons, or once I did acquire enough moons to be able to have access to the next kingdom, I left and headed to that kingdom, which was the Lake Kingdom and the town of Lake Lamode. And that I will talk to you and come back to in just a bit. Now, I will say, after the Lake Kingdom, I went to the Wooded Kingdom and its Steam Gardens. So I landed the Odyssey in the forested area and enjoyed, honestly, the platforming and unique gameplay options here that were on hand. There is a tank that Mario and Cappy can take over, and you can fire bullets out of the tank, of course, missiles, whatever you want to call them, and use that in the form of taking out different enemy types, or really just for puzzle solving or traversal options. You can destroy massive brown rocks that are in the right way so that you can jump and get kind of hopscotch, is what I call it, up the side of the mountain and get to the top, or things that are blocking your way, those kinds of things. And in addition to that, you also have these flowers that when you fling Cappy at them, basically they speed you up, and it cracks me up because I'm like, man, this is totally Sonic the Hedgehog right here, because there are massive sized golden rings that look like Sonic rings. And as I'm flying through as Mario using these flowers, it's just, I'm just like, oh man, is Nintendo trying to do a little like, haha, or is it just ironic? I don't know. But either way, it was definitely fun. I did not enjoy the Wooded Kingdom as much as I did the previous kingdoms, but it's not to say that it was a bad kingdom. But gamer, somehow I ended up spending more time there than any of the other kingdoms, but it was because I was going after moons. I just couldn't stop going after moons. Every time I turned around, there was a new area to go to, or a new secret path that I figured out. And the moons, that is all about the progression of the game. If you're just trying to complete and move through the game, you have to have a certain amount before you can go to the next kingdom. So you have to do a certain amount. But if you're a diehard completionist and want to get 100%, then you got to go after all of them. And I don't know, there was just some fun challenges here in the Wooded Kingdom and secret areas, like I said. And I just kept finding myself just continuing to stay around. Ultimately, though, I did finally leave. And I don't say that in a negative way, like, oh, finally, I'm getting out of here. But ultimately, I did leave. And I crossed the Cloud Kingdom and the Nimbus area. And I won't say too much about that because I don't want to put spoilers out there. I know the game's been around for 5 years now, but still. And ultimately ended up in the Lost Kingdom on the Forgotten Isle. And gamers, it's the first kingdom that I have not completely enjoyed. And I don't know. I like the visual style of it, but I haven't liked the traversal aspects of it. I don't like the way it's set up in that sense. And there are these rainbow creatures that are like caterpillars that extend and contract and extend and contract. And you can use Cappy to morph into them or take them over, if you will. And you can use that and that extension and, you know, that's how you progress. That's how you cross these chasms or purple, bubbly, deadly liquid beneath you. And I don't know. It's not resonated with me. I'll put it to you that way. The Lost Kingdom so far. But we'll see what happens as I continue to progress. That is where I ultimately have left off in my travels with Mario Odyssey as of the time of this recording. So hopefully next week I'll be able to share with you some more really fun kingdoms that I get to after the Lost one. So that was my Captain's Log. Now let's see what my highlights of the week was. Gamers, whether it was the plague-ridden villages of France or the multiple different types of kingdoms in Mario Odyssey, there was a lot of adventuring and fun and terror that I had this past week. But out of it all, what was the highlight? Well, as I stated earlier, I told you I was going to come back to the Lake Kingdom and Lake Lamode. And therefore, here we are. My highlight of the week was my time spent in the Lake Kingdom and the town of Lake Lamode. And I gotta say, absolutely, out of all the kingdoms that I've visited so far in Mario Odyssey, that kingdom, the Lake Kingdom, has been by far my favorite. Guys, I always love anything water themed. Obviously, look at my show, right? Swimming in games and exploring underwater is always a huge, huge love of mine as well. So, thus, for me, this kingdom had it all. Guys, first off, the graphics in this kingdom. Like, the graphics just in general, let me put that out there, for Mario Odyssey are just awesome. I mean, for a game that came out 5 years ago on the Switch, which is a lesser powerful console than, you know, PS5, Series X. I mean, this is still a really good-looking game. And when I got to the Lake Kingdom and landed and was just looking around, oh, my God, it's just gorgeous. The sparkling waters underneath the surface and above the surface, the rainbow colored schools of fish swimming around and darting around, the way the air bubbles, the design of all the different structures underwater, above water. It's almost got this kind of like ancient Greece, Atlantis kind of feel to it with the pillars and the way the pillars are shaped. And then I also loved, you know, in Star Wars, The Phantom Menace, there's like these bubbles that they go to and they swim down to at the bottom of the lake on Naboo. And when they get down there, they go through these bubbles. And then it's like they're inland and there's oxygen and you can breathe and walk around and function down there. Well, it's the same kind of thing. There's pockets of those around Lake Lamode. And I thought it was awesome. Like, you just transition from, you're swimming here in the depths of the water. And then you just go through this little bubble and bloop, there you go. You're walking around, running and jumping and woohoo, ha-ha. All over again. And I just thought that was really cool. I loved the puzzles and the zipper function. If you have played the game, you know what I'm talking about, where you use a zipper to cut out this massive piece of like the environment or whatnot and go in. Usually it's this little side stage that gets you a moon or so. But I love that. I love the little Loch Ness monster that is in there swimming around with you. The Loch Ladies that are all around populating the city. The little story about the Loch Lady dress, I don't know. It was the perfect timing for me and just really, really resonated with me, this town of Lake Lamode and the Lake Kingdom. So that was my highlight of the week. Now let's go see what kind of buried treasure gaming tips I have for you in Mario Odyssey. Gamers, when it comes to this week's Buried Treasure gaming segment, there are a lot of things that I could have gone with in regards to Super Mario Odyssey, but there is one thing that I just kept coming back to, and I said, I gotta go with it, and that is, do not sleep on the brochure. And what is the brochure, you might ask, if you never played the game, or even if you played the game, maybe you didn't look at the details of the brochure. Well, the brochure, it actually gives you access to a lot of things. It brings up the in-game mini-map. It also shows you so many cool details about the kingdom that you're in. And I love it. I think it's great. So typically on the left-hand side, I mean, you'll have little details like the temperature and the size and population of the people that are there and things like that. But from a tip standpoint, the thing that I want to tell you is these fun details, there are more than just the temperature and the size of the people who live here, right? There's actually details about the kingdom that can a lot of times allude to locations and the means of acquiring more moons. So pay attention to some of those details. There's also some pictures of certain locations throughout the kingdom that you're in that can also kind of be a visual tip for you to, hey, if you see this, like keep this, you know, kind of save this picture in your mind. So when you're exploring the kingdom, oh yeah, I remember that in the brochure. That is where this specific location or character or potentially moon could be. Also, utilizing the map to get your bearings and seeing this broader overview of the area is good, but it's also a way that you can access fast travel in the game throughout the kingdom that you're in. And you do this by selecting the Mario flag checkpoints that you've passed through as you're exploring the map in the game. So don't sleep on that either, especially if you are all the way at the end of the map and you want to go back to the Odyssey to get out of there. You can teleport right back, or just if there's specific areas and you're trying to moon hunt and you know you got to get to a certain elevation or location and you don't feel like doing the whole 9 yards of all the platforming to get back up there. If there is a checkpoint flag that you've passed, use that and fast travel. Get you right there. Save you some time. So don't sleep on the brochure and Mario Odyssey. A lot of fun, a lot of cool fun details, but also a lot of different clues in there as to how to gain access to some more moons and, of course, fast travel. Now let's go check out this week's Captain's Decree. Gamers, with everything that came out of Silent Hill Transmission, there was still one question that really kept coming back either online that I would see or even somewhat in my mind. And that question is, why Silent Hill 2 over the original? Well, I'm here to say and give my understanding and reasoning as to why they made that decision. Also, I'm going to ask, which would I prefer and why? Do I want more remakes from past games in the series? And if so, which ones? So first off, why did Konami go with Silent Hill 2 over Silent Hill 1? In my opinion, it's pretty short and easy as far as the answer goes. And that is, Silent Hill 2 is more highly regarded and more popular than that first original game. Believe it or not. Don't get me wrong. There is a massive amount of love for that original Silent Hill game. But it does not have Pyramid Head. And it is also not considered as highly for its story as the second game was. So you look at the second game, which is typically considered the pinnacle of the series, which I know is kind of like, wow, it's the second game and there are so many more after, and that's the pinnacle. But it's the truth. It took everything that made the first game great and improved upon it in every way. And that's what a great sequel does, right? So over the years, it's always been up there on top 10 lists of greatest horror games and stories and whatnot. So I think that it made sense for Konami from a financial standpoint that they were going to go with that game. In addition to the fact that Pyramid Head makes his debut in Silent Hill 2, and he is probably the most recognizable character, evil, good, enemy, protagonist, otherwise, in the entire series. So when you see Pyramid Head, you know Silent Hill. And I think that was the other part of it is, hey, look, this game has always been regarded as the best in the series. It's the most iconic. It has the recognizable imagery that we could use in marketing for Pyramid Head. We're going to roll with Silent Hill 2, see how fan response is to it, see how it sells. If it's positive, maybe we will go back at that point and revisit the original Silent Hill. So, which do I prefer? Would I have preferred they did the original game over the second game? You know, initially I want to say yes, but at the end of the day, I'm honestly glad that they did not. That original game, as much as I love it, and as much as I would be right there the second after midnight that it released as a digital pre-order that I would have right there on my PS5, I played through that game 4 or 5 times on the original PlayStation. I never finished Silent Hill 2, as I stated earlier. So for me, I look at it as a missed opportunity that I can jump on and take advantage of in this situation. Be like, all right, well, hey, this is a second opportunity for me to actually complete this game and do it in today's modern technology. Because look, Silent Hill HD Collection had Silent Hill 2 and 3 on it that I have digitally on my Xbox. I could play that. I could still play Silent Hill 2 in that way. But I'm kind of glad that I didn't, because now here we are, full on remake. So I honestly am kind of glad that they ended up going with Silent Hill 2. But do I want more remakes from the past games? And if so, which ones? Absolutely, I do. I do still want the original game to be remade. I would love to play through that game's story again, and especially like what they say they're doing with 2, where it's kind of like a retelling. They take the basic plot points of that original game and kind of flesh it out and add or tweak or remove things that didn't work or work better now. So if they did that with that original game, I'm all for it, man. Like, I loved the boss fights, the exploration of the town, and the iconic locations that you go, like the elementary school and the hospital. I would love to do those things with today's technology for the original game. Silent Hill 3, I would love to see that game remade. And again, that is another missed opportunity for me that I could take advantage of the opportunity this time and actually beat it, because I never beat Silent Hill 3. When it gets to Silent Hill 4, The Room, I love that game. I actually beat that game. I don't necessarily want to see it remade. It was honestly before its time, in the sense that Resident Evil tried to go the first-person route and has done so successfully, it would seem, with Resident Evil 7 and 8, but Silent Hill did it first with Silent Hill 4, The Room. And I really enjoyed the game, but I don't feel that I need to replay it again in today's technology. And then when we get into Silent Hill Homecoming and Silent Hill Downpour, some of the least regarded games in the series, I don't necessarily feel like I personally, this is me personally now, need to replay those or see those redone in today's technology. I will say that Silent Hill Shattered Memories, that came out on the PSP and on the Wii, I did play through that and beat that on the PSP. I played through Homecoming and Downpour, just to clarify as well. And I also played through Silent Hill Origins, which came out on PS2 and PSP. That was amazing. I love Silent Hill Origins. Don't really see the need for it now, remade. And the same thing with Shattered Dimensions. That was essentially a, in its own way, a retelling of the original game. So for me, I think Silent Hill 1, Silent Hill 3. But after that, just kind of focus on new experiences going forward. And I think the series will be just fine with what looks to be these new experiences and stories and ways to expand the Silent Hill experience. It definitely looks like Konami knows what they want to do, and that the series is in good hands. That'll do it for this week's episode. I hope you've enjoyed your time aboard the SS Gamer. You can join its crew by reaching out to me via email at lostatseagaming365@gmail.com, as well as searching for Hulking Yoda on the Xbox, PlayStation, and Nintendo Switch networks. You can also find me on social media, on Instagram at lostatseagaming, as well as on Twitter at lostatseagamin, the number one. Thank you for listening, and until the sea says otherwise, we'll keep sailing.